Hi, I'm Kelly Corrigan. You've probably never heard of me. Maybe you did. I wrote some New York Times bestsellers. I gave a TED Talk. But the reason I'm in your ear now is to invite you to listen to Kelly Corrigan Wonders. We talk to everyone from Bono to Amy Schumer, Spike Lee to Rainn Wilson, Krista Tippett and Bryan Stevenson about purpose, creativity, well-being, and what makes life worth living. Follow and listen to Kelly Corrigan Wonders on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We have a podcast.
Diving deep into all things Texas, both on and off the field. Here's Sean Pendergast.
Welcome
to Utopia.
Hey everybody, welcome in. It is Sunday morning following the Texans season-ending divisional round loss for the Kansas City Chiefs. Right back where we started. Five other times in this round of the playoffs. The Texans going home in frustrating fashion, not nearly as lopsided a fashion as most years in the divisional round, yet still probably for that reason even more frustrating that this was a very, very winnable game for the Texans. As we welcome you into what will be the final episode of the season involving games, but obviously the offseason rolls on the podcast. The mailbag will continue every week. And now we've got a very pivotal offseason to look forward to. We'll talk more about that later on in the week as to where the Texans kind of go from here. But this podcast is really going to be more about Saturday's game against the Chiefs, the good and the bad. Ultimately, the only thing that matters really is the result of the game. 23-14, the final score. And this was, in many ways, a microcosm of the Texans' season, with some other bad sprinkled in with it that may have been a little bit unexpected. I think this looked a lot like your typical Texans game against a good team, and particularly on the road throughout the season, where a lot of people coming into this game had talked about turnovers and the Texans' ability to turn over good quarterbacks. Jared Goff, 5 interceptions, which is more than he'd thrown all year to that point. Justin Herbert, 4 interceptions, more than he threw all season after an entire season. Tua Tagovailoa, 4 turnovers in that game. He had played very good football coming in. For whatever reason, people, some in Houston and some outside of Houston, failed to recognize that these are all games that took place at NRG Stadium. I don't know exactly what people were expecting to happen in this game. That people thought that there was going to be a carryover effect from the Justin Herbert game to the Patrick Mahomes game, and ignoring the fact that that game was going to be played not only on the road, but in one of the toughest road environments to play in. I thought it was just really, really strange to me that the dichotomy of the Texans' defense, which, by the way, played very well yesterday, but there's a difference between playing very well and getting turnover margin. There was no turnover margin for the Texans yesterday. I think that was number one. They needed turnovers to win that game because they outgained the Chiefs by over 100 yards. But obviously, the Chiefs are a team that if you give them an inch at any point during the game, they take advantage of every situation. We'll talk about that on this podcast as well. But this looked a lot like a Texans game during the regular season, where the offense, you could see some things in there. You know, you look at this and you go, okay, C.J. Stroud certainly isn't the biggest problem out here, although taking sacks yesterday was a huge issue for C.J. And for the offensive line, too. There were 8 sacks in the game. We've seen that before. We've seen them give up 8 sacks in a game before and lose a game on the road by almost an identical score against the Jets. We've seen the defense have great efforts, but it's all for naught because the offense can't do anything. I think the things that reared their head yesterday that made this game untenable for the Texans, special teams was absolutely abysmal. We'll get into that in winners and losers. But this was the worst special teams effort by the Texans with Frank Ross as a special teams head coach. And to me, it's not even close, especially given the stakes in this game. And it began on the very first play, and it ended with what essentially was the very last play that mattered of this game. Special teams failed the Houston Texans. We'd be remiss not to point out some of the calls in the game, but I'm not going to lead with officiating in this game. I thought that there were way too many Texans players and head coaches after this game that were leading with referee blaming in this game. And don't get me wrong, those 2 calls that the Texans had called against them, the Will Anderson unnecessary roughness and the Henry Toa Toa unnecessary roughness, both on Patrick Mahomes, both with plays against Patrick Mahomes were horrible, horrible calls. They were not the reason the Texans lost this game. They need to be pointed out. They were a theme in this game. Troy Aikman would not let me go through this podcast, I promise you, without pointing that out. I thought those calls were going to break Troy Aikman, but that I am not going to lead with that because I just the more I listened to the players in the locker room after the game, the more I thought it just sounded like loser shit. And there's a whole lot more things that need to be fixed than worrying about the referees in Kansas City with this football team. So that was kind of painful to listen to, especially Will Anderson, who's my favorite player on this team. Favorite interview, favorite player on this team is Will Anderson. And to hear him actually use the phrase, "We knew it was going to be us against the refs," that's loser shit, man. That is just, it's the refs were an issue, no question about it. It's a broader issue than just the Texans that Mahomes gets some of the treatment that he does. But that was not the reason you lost this game. The Texans made plenty of mistakes in this game. And this is going to be, again, a really big offseason for Nick Caserio and DeMeco Ryans to figure some things out. DeMeco Ryans, it's going to be a big offseason for him because he's going to have to make some tough decisions that I don't know are necessarily in the bag of the DeMeco that we've seen throughout his time here. He's been this beacon of positivity. Everybody's a family. We're all friends. That's why this locker room is so great. You might have to fire some of your friends, DeMeco. So we'll find out if DeMeco is what I like to call a wartime head coach. That phrase comes from the Godfather movie where, you know, they talk about a wartime consigliere. And, you know, can you be a guy who has to make the tough decisions when it's called for, when times are not great? And I think times are good for the Texans right now. The trajectory is going up on this team. But this is the last season where walking off the field in the divisional round will be viewed as where there will be any positive surrounding it. You know, I think you can look at yesterday and the fact that they played. I think they're good enough to beat the Chiefs. I think they may have more talent than the Chiefs. The Chiefs have Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce. And that was the big difference in yesterday's game. They can play with the Chiefs. They beat the Bills this year. Now, the Ravens, that's a different animal. We'll see. But I'm just talking about getting into that top tier. We can get a home game in the divisional round. Be one of the two best teams in the AFC in the regular season. I think they can do that. I think they need a good offseason, and that's where Nick Caserio comes in. But I think the biggest question for the two biggest decision makers in the building, can DeMeco Ryans be a wartime head coach? Can he make the tough decisions that involve firing people that he may like? He didn't have to do any of that last year. We were still – that was even with as bad as that Ravens playoff loss was, we were all happy. It was all gravy last year. Nobody was expecting to get to the postseason. People were expecting Super Bowl contention this year. So there will be tough decisions to be made. And if he chooses to keep Bobby Slowick, if he chooses to keep Chris Strouser, he's going to have to explain the reasons why. He needs good explanations as to why. It's not just going to suffice that we just need to execute better. I need good reasons why we should be optimistic if indeed Bobby Slowick stays around. Just to get out in front of this, because I know I'm going to get mailbag questions about it. I think Bobby Slowick's back next year. That's my gut feeling. I don't have any information along those lines. That's just a gut feel. Because until I see DeMeco Ryans fire people that he likes, I'm going to assume that he's going to keep them around. I want him to prove me wrong. I think they could use a facelift on offense. And I think we saw yesterday Bobby's difficulty in either making adjustments or just not recognizing the skills of some of his guys. Because Dalton Schultz wound up in edge rusher pass blocking situations in the second half of that game is just egregious malpractice. So that's the biggest question for DeMeco. Can he fire his friends? And number two, for Nick Caserio, can you operate in an offseason where now you don't have the resources from a cap standpoint that you did last year? You know, it was mathematically at least easy to go out and get Danielle Hunter and Azeez Al-Shaair and DeNico Autry. And I'm glad all those guys are on the team. Stephon Diggs. But, you know, you've got a Derek Stingley extension that's looming. You got all those guys that are still on the team this year. Dalton Schultz they gave a contract to, which, yikes. All the money you have invested in the offensive line. So they need to improve this team. There are specific areas of improvement. I think we all know what they are. Can Nick Caserio, he can do it, but can he do it and have as good an upgrade in the incoming influx of talent as he did last year? Did a great job on the draft last year. You come away with two starters on defense in the secondary that played well for you this year and potentially your right tackle of the future. And I like Cade Stover too, the tight end. So that you came away with some pieces in that draft, you need to do that again this year. Presumably you're going to have your first round pick unless you make a trade of some sort. If they were to do that, if they were to trade, I'm guessing they're going to pick around 26th or 27th, just like last year. You know, if you make another deal where you pick up an extra second round pick, like you did last year, and you still wind up with Kamari Lassiter as the 42nd overall, I'm all for that. I don't need a first round pick this year if you're going to stockpile some talent. And the more you allocate in cap dollars to your high ticket guys, you know, they're going to have a lot of high ticket guys on this team coming up. The more you need to hit home runs in the draft, and you got a better chance of hitting home runs with 10 or 11 at bats instead of just 6 or 7 at bats. So I think it's a big offseason for D'Amico Ryans and Nick Caseria. Once your team is operating at the level the Texans are, where it looks like they're going to have a stranglehold on their division, they look like a perennial playoff team now. They've got the quarterback in place. They've got the head coach they want. Then every offseason's big, you know? So Nick is – he's swimming at a different end of the pool this offseason. You know, this is a different world resource-wise that he's living in. I'm confident he can navigate it. He's known it's coming for a while now. He's watched high-level front office decision-making take place, for the most part, up in New England for the 20 years that he was up there. So let's go. All right, let's get into the game from yesterday. Let's do a little 4 winners, 4 losers, and then it's on to the offseason. Hey, quick reminder, if you can hit that subscribe button, do it right now. Hit that subscribe button. We head into the offseason with some podcast momentum as well. That would be great. Give us a rating and a review, too. We appreciate that. I know the mailbag is going to be gigantic this week. This may be a jumbo mailbag episode this week, I'm assuming, with fallout from the Chiefs game. And then the look ahead to the offseason. So houmailbag@gmail.com, houmailbag@gmail.com. Let's get into 4 winners and 4 losers. That's what we do. That's how we break down every game. Again, 23-14, the final score. The Houston Texans lose to the Kansas City Chiefs. By the way, as I said in the open here, you know, the Texans, it was a very typical Texans loss where the defense was really good. The offense was very, very scattershot, mediocre, little flashes of things. But when the time came, when nut-cutting time came, it was sacks, it was mental errors, it was all that stuff. The special teams being bad yesterday was not planned for, and I think that's why ultimately it winds up being what really amounted to a double-digit win for the Chiefs. Although I know we'll get into that safety and 4 winners and 4 losers that made it a 9-point game. But when I say a typical Texans loss, they've had too many losses this year where afterwards there's tweets like, this is the first time since 1970 that a team has lost a game when ... happened against the Lions with all the interceptions for against Jared Goff, the 5 interceptions, and they lose the game. You know, that was one of those, you know, 3 teams have won a game since 1970 when they've thrown 5 interceptions, shit like that. Today it was no team has ever lost a postseason game, ever lost a postseason game, when outgaining their opponent by 100 yards or more and not turning the ball over. And the Texans managed to do that. The Texans, too often this year, found ways to lose games. Green Bay finding ways to lose games. The Lions, for sure, finding a way to lose the game when you're up big at halftime, 23-7, and you just don't score the rest of the game. You pick off Jared Goff 5 times. Inexcusable. The Titans game, where you sack Will Levis 8 times, you get a pick 6. Somehow you lose that game. That was another one of those games. Like, not since the Civil War has a team lost a game when ... And you did it again yesterday. That's on D'Amico Ryans. You know, I know D'Amico's going to point to all the mistakes. Man, that's horrible. When you have 3 losses like that during a season, the Lions loss, the Titans loss, and then losing in the playoffs, where you have such a heavy statistical advantage that only like 1% of the teams that have ever done that have lost the game before. That's fucking terrible. And there were instances in this game where I thought, like, D'Amico was much shakier this year managing games than he was in his rookie season, ironically. And I don't have this in 4 winners and 4 losers. This is just me. This is still me kind of riffing on the game yesterday. But, like, I thought that D'Amico not challenging that Xavier Hutchinson potential first down didn't end up hurting them. They ended up converting anyways. Of course, C.J. Stroud had to take another wallop along the sidelines to convert it on one of his runs. But it's that D'Amico didn't challenge. And you guys know the play I'm talking about. Xavier Hutchinson catches a 3rd down pass. Clearly looks like a 1st down. Even on replay, clearly looks like a 1st down. They don't challenge it. And then they get a penalty to make it 3rd and 6. So not challenging it there. They're lucky they converted. But if they hadn't converted on that 3rd and 6, that's a huge mistake not challenging. And then whatever the fuck was going on that 4th and 10 – where they decided to go for it, which is fine. You feel like you're desperate. It's fourth down. You don't want to give the ball back to Mahomes. You watched up close last time them grind the clock out on you in the fourth quarter. So I kind of understand it. How about getting the play in before there's like 6 seconds on the play clock? How about using a timeout to get situated on what's the biggest down of the season? I mean, luckily the defense actually held up the next series and got a three and out, and the Texans got the ball back. But man, D'Amico's game management and sideline operations at time this year is worse than it was in his first year. And I think that's been underplayed. I think D'Amico Ryan's still very much stocked up as a head coach, very much. As long as the defense is going to play like this, it's going to be really hard to view D'Amico Ryan's in a negative light overall as the head coach. But he needs to fix this offense, and he needs to get his shit together in these key moments on the sideline. That was inexcusable yesterday, that the Texans are coming up to they're breaking the huddle with 7 seconds left on the play clock on the biggest play of the season. It's just, I'm getting mad talking about it. So D'Amico didn't wind up in four losers, but the more I talk this through, the only thing that's keeping him out is he's the guy that's coaching that defense, and the defense was amazing yesterday. I know they gave up 23 points. They only gave up 200 yards, and again, the offense didn't put them in great spots. Kymie missing a field goal, leaving a short field. Early in the game, special teams, and we can get into this now with four winners and four loop, but special teams, we'll get into special teams in a little bit, but special teams putting them on a short field. This is the second straight week that the defense was put on a short field in the first two possessions, and both times they held the opposition to a field goal. So defense ain't the problem on this team. Now, covering Travis Kelce was a problem for the defense. Let's get into all that. Let's do four winners and four losers, shall we? I keep sitting here saying that. I probably have touched on a lot of it here in my diatribe in the open, but let's get to it. And I'll start with Will Anderson Jr. There are certain things when it comes to the Texans' future that we're going to be taking inventory of, I would imagine, here. If you're not already doing it today, we'll do it this week on Payne and Pendergast for sure. But kind of taking a look back and going, okay, what are the things now that we feel like are great about this team moving forward? What do we feel really good about? And the thing I might feel best about is Will Anderson Jr. You know, when it comes to the Texans' future, you know, that day that they traded up to get Will right after they drafted CJ, I don't know that we could have envisioned that whole sequence working out better than it has. I know CJ wasn't as good this year as he was last year, statistically at least. I think he was dealing with more stuff around him this year in terms of protection and mental errors by his teammates than he was last year. I think CJ's every bit as good a quarterback now as he was a year ago, and I'm 100% confident he's the guy moving forward. They got to fix some things around him. I don't think that the Will Anderson Jr. CJ Stroud sequence, I'll flip it around, CJ Stroud and Will Anderson Jr. sequence in order could have worked out any better. And Will looks like he's going to be a disruptive force for a long, long time. He was excellent yesterday, 2 sacks. He had a sack with Joe Thuney on his back, draped on Will's back like he was carrying him like piggyback style, and sacked Patrick Mahomes. 3 TFLs, constant disruption, boundless energy. The only thing I didn't like about Will Anderson Jr. yesterday was him saying we knew it would be us against the refs. That's the only bad play he had. He got victimized by poor officiating on the unnecessary roughness call, super sketchy. It allowed the Chiefs to extend their second drive of the game and tack on a field goal. Texans would have gotten off the field on that play. We'll talk more about that in the next bullet point. But Will Anderson Jr., if I'm listing the things I feel great about this team moving forward, hard to argue that he's not at the top of the list. He's just 2 years in. He's the real deal, on and off the field. Love Will Anderson Jr. He's my favorite player on the team. Next winner. So that's number four, Will Anderson Jr. Number three, people who complain about the officials all day long, all week long leading up to the game. And there were plenty of them on my Twitter timeline this week. And my point was, man, y'all are complaining about the officials on Tuesday? Let's let them fuck it up first before we complain about it. Well, sure enough, the referees fucked it up. And I am not a blame the refs guy. This is not me blaming the referees for the loss at all. But this is going to be something that I think gets talked about nationally tomorrow when they're breaking down all these games, is how they're handling the quarterbacks. It's just ridiculous that if you're anywhere near the head, forget about helmet to helmet or actually touching the head of Patrick Mahomes. If you're anywhere near the head, it's a penalty. And from what I gathered on the broadcast, they're allowed to review these things. I didn't totally grasp or get my arms around this. They did, you know, the reason ended up not overturning the calls. But the Will Anderson Jr. call was terrible. The timing was awful. And then the second one where Patrick Mahomes, as my co-host Seth Payne put it, chose to go back into the danger. He could have gone out of bounds. He dances and tippy-toes and prances in there and then goes to the ground. And Henry Toa goes helmet to helmet with a teammate, not even with Mahomes, and it gets called a penalty. This is bad. Like, I'm not even saying this because I'm a Texan fan. Like, if I were watching this game, I'm like, this just isn't good. It's too punitive. These refs don't know how to call it. They don't know how to review it or even choose to review it. But if you're somebody who bitched about the officials preemptively all week and I gave you shit for it, I and Seth, both of us pointed out, like, this is a horrible way to go through life. Like, the one thing about having your team in the playoffs, it should be fun that week leading up to it to look forward to. It should be like looking forward. You know the feeling you get looking forward to a vacation? To me, part of going on vacation is like the week and a half before, where you know vacation is coming and you got that anticipation going that vacation's coming and whatnot. That's a cool feeling. That's how it should be for these games. And yet some of you, as I pointed out, choose to wallow in preemptive officiating, policing, and complaining. You guys were big winners on Saturday. You were right. I was wrong. And the referees fucking sucked. And if we're looking at calls missed for either side, there were way more calls missed that benefited the Chiefs in this game than there were calls that benefited the Texans. And some of that is just sports. You know, they're the three-time Super Bowl champ. They're at home. The refs are human. These things happen in all sports. But those two 15-yard penalties were just so fucked up. And it's just so symptomatic of the whole Mahomes thing. I hope his head rolls off his torso like a pumpkin in the AFC title game if he tries that stuff against the Bills or especially the Ravens. And by the way, I'm a huge Ravens fan right now. I think if I'm looking at these two teams, I think both these teams are capable of going into Arrowhead and winning. If the Chiefs were giving up yards on the ground against the Texans like they were, and this leads us into the next winner. So winner number four, Will Anderson Jr. Winner number three, officiating complainers. Winner number two, Joe Mixon. If the Chiefs are going to give up yards on the ground to Joe Mixon the way they did, Derrick Henry is going to run for 250 yards on them. Of all the moves the Texans made in the offseason, and we'll probably grade them at some point this week, you know, how'd they work out, that kind of thing. I would say of all the moves they made, the Joe Mixon move probably gets the highest grade based on the price they gave up, which they traded like a seventh-round pick for him. And then the contract they gave out, I think he's well worth it. I think he's getting like $9 million a year or something like that, and they have him for two more years. That ended up being the best move, I think, by the Texans. And so Mixon goes over 1,000 yards for the season, became a real leader in the locker room, although he was another one complaining about the refs yesterday as the lead into his discussion of the game. But on Sunday, when the offense was really clicking, it was Mixon who was spearheading the whole thing. And just, I think, getting into second and five and second and six with this offense as limited as they are on the outside, receiver-wise, without Tank Dell and Stephon Diggs, those are huge. You know, that drive, that long drive they had, that 10.5-minute drive, maybe the best drive in the history of the football team to start the second half. Mixon was a huge part of that. He's the one that got into the end zone. Good season for Joe Mixon. Joe Mixon a winner. And I like what he's brought to the team this year. I'm happy to have Joe Mixon. Number one winner, Travis Kelce. And it was interesting because it was the box score-wise similar dynamic to last week's game with the Chargers, where like vast majority of the passing yards went to one guy. Last week it was Ladd McConkey, accounted for a huge majority of the yards in that Chargers game, including a long touchdown, big chunk play. The Chiefs were very lopsided to Travis Kelce. I think the big difference, other than just the position the two play and the experience level of the two, those are obvious differences. But Ladd McConkey, like, seemed to actually have to work for it. Travis Kelce, I don't know, had a guy within 10 yards of him on any of his seven receptions. I got to go back and watch today. But their strategy to defend him was fucked up. I don't know what it was. I'm not so sure that Azeez Al-Shaair, once he went out with a knee injury, that coming back in was the best idea. I'm not so sure that they would have been better off with Neville Hewitt in this game playing inside linebacker, because Al-Shaair was not a difference maker yesterday. And he was bad in coverage. He hit the touchdown to Kelce. I don't know what Azeez was doing on that play. Overall, the defense did a really good job. I think, as a subtext to the Travis Kelce winner, I should say Derek Stingley Jr. and Kamari Lassiter, because the Chiefs wide receivers didn't do shit in this game. Only one even had a catch, and it was Xavier Worthy, had five catches for less than 10 yards a catch. I mean, I think two or three of the catches were little shovels behind the line. Those barely even count. So the Texans corners, I would add them to the winners on this list. Kelce was great, though. I mean, and when he got the ball, he did things with it. He scored a touchdown, the long 49-yard catch and run. He broke a couple tackles. This seems to be what Travis Kelce is going to be, where we talked during the regular season about, well, he's still making catches. He's not really impactful. He's kind of getting old. He even looks a little fat. And then the playoffs come around. He's got seven catches for 117 yards. The guy's just, he's in the argument for best tight end in the history of the game. And he's the all-time leading receiver in terms of catches in the postseason. Trails only Jerry Rice in yards and touchdowns. He was great yesterday. You got beat by a great player in Travis Kelce making plays, and you got beat by Patrick Mahomes, who took advantage of situations and when he needed to make plays, made plays. I still hope he gets his brain splattered on the turf in the AFC title game. And I will laugh and laugh and laugh if that happens. But until it does, he's the GOAT right now. He's the current GOAT. Brady's the GOAT. Mahomes is the active GOAT. All right, let's get to losers. And Kyme Fairbairn, I don't know what to do with you, man. Early in the season, you were really, really good. You were making history. You were winning games. And those were the good old days, because unfortunately, you suck right now. Very shaky in the second half of the season. I hate that there was a repeat in this game of the exact same thing that happened in the first Chiefs game, which was the Texans score what should have been a tying touchdown on an early drive in the second half, and the game doesn't get tied because Kyme Fairbairn can't make an extra point in temperatures below 50 degrees. Just horrible. Just fucking terrible. The 55-yard field goal I would excuse if it didn't look like I kicked it. Like, if it was 55, but it had the distance to go from 65 and it just scraped the paint on the outside of the upright, okay. It's windy. The conditions are not good. I will grant you that on a 55-yard field goal. But missing an extra point in that fashion for the second straight time in that stadium, when you're fighting to try to beat the king, is just – It's embarrassing. It sucks. You have one job. And then for the game to finish, essentially, for all intents and purposes, with a 35-yard field goal getting blocked, and make no mistake, this was not some dude getting 4 feet in the air and blocking the kick. Some white dude named Chanel, Leo Chanel, blocked it. That thing wasn't going in from 35 either way. But I thought it was interesting that the actual beginning of the game was a special teams fuck up on the kick return. And then we'll get into Chris Boyd here in a second in losers. And he's like such a loser. But that it began on a special teams fuck up and basically, for all intents and purposes, except for you gamblers out there, ended on a special teams fuck up, I thought was just, it was appropriate for this game. Special teams was awful, which leads me into bullet point number three. Kyme Fairbairn, loser number four. Loser number three, I'll stay Chris Boyd, but honestly, I could just put Frank Ross here because of what his group did. I love Frank Ross, and I think Frank Ross is a really good coach. His guys were not ready to play yesterday, whether it was the weather conditions or just not dialed in. You give up a 63-yard return on the opening kickoff, and then you're Chris Boyd, and good job stripping the ball. Bad job just running away from the play, throwing your helmet in celebration, and not paying attention to the fact that your team didn't even recover the fumble, you dipshit. They didn't even recover the fumble, and you're throwing your helmet, and then you're shoving Frank Ross for God knows what reason. I'm guessing celebrating, but Frank Ross is like pointing out there like, hey, bro, you just cost us 15 more yards. Kudos to the defense for holding up after that and getting off the field. Like, even when the Texans were trailing 6-3 in this game, I felt great about that game. They were trailing 6-3. The Chiefs get a field goal on a short field because special teams screwed up, and because Chris Boyd's a moron. And then the Texans drive down the field fairly easily, but have to settle for a field goal. And then the Chiefs get a field goal on a drive that was kept alive by one of the worst calls we've ever seen. So even trailing 6-3, I'm like, okay, I think they got some good things going here. Chris Boyd needs to be gone. This isn't selective picking on him either. Like, he has a dumb penalty every week. He sucks. And when he's your depth at corner also, like when he, like when there's a chance he gets on the field and plays corner for you, which there is on this team, because they got nothing after Lassiter and Stingley at corner. Their corners suck beyond those two guys. And Chris Boyd's awful at corner. So if you're awful at corner, you better be really, really good at special teams. And Chris Boyd makes mistakes every week. I loved Andre Ware just laying into him on the broadcast. Chris Boyd sucks. He's loser number three. Loser number two, Dalton Schultz. Schultz did some decent things catching the football in this game, but his lack of physicality, one, after the catch on plays, is so embarrassingly soft. Like, he catches the ball, then covers up the ball and just tippy toes until somebody drags him to the ground. But the softness in the blocking is terrible. And last year, at least, it felt like, okay, Schultz sucks at blocking, but he at least appears to be willing to do it. This year, yesterday, he almost got C.J. Stroud killed a couple times. Schultz looked like he was single-handedly trying to take care of George Karlaftis' grandkids by making sure Karlaftis could go get peak edge rusher money. Karlaftis had three sacks, and at least two of them were because Dalton Schultz blocks like my grandmother. Just totally weak. Weak in the run blocking, weak in the pass protection. They're stuck with him for another year because of the contract that he has. Maybe he can make a trade and figure some things out. I haven't seen exactly. I know he's got 23 of the $36 million guaranteed. You know, some of it's salary for next year, then maybe someone's willing to trade for him. I would revamp that tight end room. The Kate Stover is the only one I would hang on to. And if you can find a way to inexpensively extricate yourself from Dalton Schultz while having a good plan B, while having a good free agent in mind that doesn't cost $12 million a year, but they can actually block a guy and it actually feels like lowering their shoulder after catching a ball, I would be all for that. And I think Texan fans would too. So they got to figure out that tight end room this offseason. Because right now, the only thing, as constructed, the only thing that I think I can hang my hat on is just prayer that Kate Stover takes a massive leap in year two. And that's a tough ask. All right, so that's loser number two, Dalton Schultz. Loser number one, Gamblers, who had the Chiefs -9.5. For those who missed it, an intentional safety from the Chiefs punter, Matt Araiza, running out of the back of the end zone, made it 23-14 instead of 23-12. The spread on this game went anywhere from like 8 to 9.5. I'd seen somebody texted me, it went to 10 at some point before kickoff. I didn't see it on any of the outlets I follow this stuff go to 10, but it did get to 9.5. I know that because I saw on the interwebs that safety had people really upset or really happy, but more people upset than happy. You know, in instances like this, there's more money on the favorite. And that's my only solace in all this is I'm guessing like there's probably like a decent chunk of Arrowhead Stadium, maybe like 20%, that had the Chiefs either like -9 or -9.5, where best case they got a push, worst case they got a loss. I can sleep a little better at night knowing that a lot of Chiefs fans are a little poorer because of Andy Reid's decision-making. Take it up with the fat man, Chiefs fans. Take it up with old Mr. Fumbleroosky-Doo, all right? Old jolly Andy Reid. Okay, so there you go. There's your four winners and four losers for yesterday's game. I think we touched on it pretty good. And you know what I did? I forgot to put up the losers graphic. Fifth loser, Sean Pendergast. If you're on the YouTube, then you can see that I messed that part up. But whatever. Hope you had a good listen. I'm tired, man. Those are long days, and when they lose, it sucks. And I'm writing my column this morning for the Houston Press and recording for you guys. I'm not expecting people to shed any tears for me in all this. I'm just telling you, that's why sometimes those are my mental errors. Those are my MEs, if you will. I didn't cost anybody a playoff loss or anything like that. I just had a few people on the YouTube probably going, hey, Sean, you're on four losers now. How about flipping the graphic? If you're just listening to the podcast, then don't worry about it. All right. We'll be back with a mailbag episode this week. HOUmailbag@gmail.com is where you can send me your emails. Big thanks to Anthony Irwin for getting this podcast out to all of you. Big thanks to all of you for listening. Season didn't end the way we wanted it to, but I feel like the arrow is pointed up. There's hope moving forward. We got our coach. We got our quarterback. We got several foundational pieces. We've reestablished NRG Stadium as a home field advantage as well. I think that's big this year, too, that teams coming in there played some of their worst football. That's great. So hopefully you guys are on board, ready to go. Rebuild's ahead of schedule. Let's fucking go next season. Got you covered all offseason long. Got you covered tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. on Facebook. So I'll see all of you then. Have a great rest of the weekend. Enjoy the games.